Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. This is episode 359 of the Divine Intervention Podcasts. And in today's podcast, I'm going to be talking about hypersensitivity reactions. As a reminder, in the month of January, I'll be holding two courses for the USMLE exams. The first one, I guess maybe three courses. The first one is on the 24th of January. It's going to be an MBME test taking strategies course. It's for 2.5 hours. I've had tons of people attend these courses and do really well on their exams. We address many different pitfalls that people make on MBME exams, and I've had many good testimonials from these courses. So if that's something you're interested in, shoot me an email. And then also, if you're taking step 2 CK or step 3 or complex level 2 or 3, I have a 24-hour step 2 CK review course. It's taking place from the 25th, that's a Tuesday, to the 28th, that's a Friday of January 2022. And then finally, if you're taking the USMLE step 1 exam and you're struggling with physiology and pathophysiology, or you're taking the step 2 CK or step 3 exams and you're struggling and you have like a really bad foundation from step one, let's say you have very low step one scores, really low shelf scores across the board, one thing that you may find to be helpful is my foundations course. That is going to be taking place from the 31st of January 2022 to the 4th of February 2022. So if you're interested in any of these courses, just shoot me an email through the website. I'll give you some more information. The courses are all held via Zoom. So hypersensitivity reactions, right? Because the thing is, we all know that we have an immune system. Well, the immune system's job is to react in certain situations. It's to notice that we have an invader, like a bacteria or a virus or a fungus or TB or whatever, and then get rid of it, take care of it, fight with it. Now, unfortunately, in some situations, the immune system gets too touchy. Almost. What do I mean by getting too touchy? It just means that the immune system is just getting too reactive, right? When you have those kinds of situations, many times that's what gives rise to a hypersensitivity reaction. Now, the thing is, essentially in a hypersensitivity reaction, your immune system is getting too sensitive to things that are ordinarily benign, right? And the thing is, it's actually very high yield for purposes of the USMLE exams. This is like literally every USMLE exam, to know the major classes of hypersensitivity reactions, to know like the key examples, and to actually understand the mechanisms. This is actually one of those areas where understanding mechanisms absolutely helps, right? And we know that there are, you know, four major kinds of hypersensitivity reactions, right? There's type 1, right? That's like the immediate one. That's the one that's mediated through IgE, right? You know, many times the cells that are kind of implicated, there are things like mast cells, basophils, things like that. Eosinophils to an extent, right? And then the type 2 hypersensitivity reactions, right, are the ones that involve antibodies. I'm just giving some broad strokes. I'm going to go into more detail as we go along, right? So type 2, those are the ones that are, you know, mostly antibodies. And really the antibodies that are the big players here are IgG and IgM, right? IgG and IgM. And then type 3, those are the ones that involve immune complex deposits, right? Immune complexes. Here you're going to be seeing a lot of the vasculitides. You're going to be seeing a lot of the nephritic syndromes. Although one notable exception is good pasture syndrome, which is a type 2 hypersensitivity reaction, right? And then the type 4 hypersensitivity reactions are more the delayed hypersensitivity reactions. Those ones usually for the most part involve like macrophages and things like that, and you form granulomas. In fact, let me tell you this. Whenever you see granulomas formed on an MBME exam, you can pretty much almost always take it to the bank. Not in all cases, but most of the time, it's going to be a type 4 hypersensitivity reaction. Now, what if they give you a question about a 24-year-old female? You know, she tells you that she has this cough that is worse at night, and when she runs in cold weather, she has very significant shortness of breath and wheezing and things like that. If you see stuff like this, what should you be thinking about? Well, I would really hope you're thinking about this person potentially having asthma, right? Asthma is like the classic poster child example of a type 1 hypersensitivity reaction, right? So what in the world causes a type 1 hypersensitivity reaction? Well, the first thing is you're going to be exposed to some kind of allergen, right? It's not like you just have the hypersensitivity for no reason. No, you're going to be challenged with an allergen. You know, it could be hay, it could be something just in the atmosphere or whatever, right? And when you're exposed to that thing for the first time, you don't have any problems. But your immune system, your T helper 2 cells, somehow get wind of that thing that has come into your body, right? So the thing is, many times, you know, your antigen presenting cells, usually your B lymphocytes, will take up that allergen, right? And then it's going to expose them to T helper 2 cells. And we know that T helper 2 cells, they are very important for the process of class switching, right? They make a lot of stuff. But the main stuff that we want to be worried about here is interleukin 4, and also to an extent interleukin 13. When those T helper 2 cells make interleukin 4, then the B lymphocytes are going to be like, okay, we're not going to make IgM. We're not going to make just IgM anymore. We're going to start making IgE, right? Remember, the first antibody you make to any kind of antigen is IgM. But when you're exposed to T helper 2 cells, they then enable you to class switch by releasing things like interleukin 4, interleukin 13. And by doing that, you're able to make autoantibodies, right? Like, for example, if you want to class switch to IgE, right, you need interleukin 4. If you want to class switch to IgA, you need interleukin 5, right? But these interleukins help you class switch, right? Because again, IgE is the kind of antibody that participates a lot in these type 1 hypersensitivity reactions. And I'm really hoping that you remember that if they give you a question about a child, it's going to be a boy that has recurring bacterial infections, and you notice that this child has low levels of all the other immunoglobulins, with the exception of IgM, I would really hope you're thinking about hyper-IgM syndrome, right? That's a class switching problem. That's a classic immunodeficiency disease that our friends at the MBMEs love to test. And it's actually very high yield to remember that it's not going to show up in girls on exams. It's just going to show up in boys. Why? Because it has X-linked recessive inheritance, right? So continue our journey, right? So you're exposed to that allergen, an antigen presenting cell like a B lymphocyte takes it up. You pair up with a T helper 2 cell, right? That T helper 2 cell produces interleukin 4, interleukin 13. So that makes you make IgE, right? And again, those B lymphocytes, once they've undergone class switching, many times they begin to differentiate towards the plasma cell lineage, right? Those plasma cells, they're like antibody factories. They make a ton of IgE, right? And then that IgE goes and parks on the surfaces of effector cells, right? So effector cells are just cells that do a lot of the damage in a hypersensitivity reaction. So these are going to be things like mast cells. These are going to be things like basophils. There's going to be things like eosinophils, right? But the big player, I would say, for purposes of the USMLE exams, in a person that has a type 1 hypersensitivity reaction, is a mast cell, right? So on the mast cell, right, that IgE that you have made is going to attach to the Fc epsilon receptors on those mast cells. Those Fc epsilon receptors, basically, they are receptors that bind to the constant region of IgE, right? They're receptors that bind to the constant region of IgE. Again, this is one of the ways omalizumab works as an anti-asthma medication. One very wonderful thing it does is that it disrupts that interaction between the Fc epsilon receptor and the constant region of IgE. So now you have these IgE antibodies parked on the surfaces of mast cells. It's not a big deal until you then get exposed to the allergen again, right? When you get exposed to the allergen again, that allergen will bind to the variable region on the IgE antibodies that are already pre-bound on mast cells. And when it binds, it then causes, though it's almost like, I think of it as like a matchmaking service, the allergen. The allergen, when it shows up, it brings two antibodies together, two IgE antibodies together that are already on mast cells that normally do not interact. And after that, guess what's going to happen? You're going to have a lot of problems. Those mast cells will degranulate. And when mast cells degranulate, they do not release anything that is pretty. I'll tell you that right now, right? They release things like histamine, bradykinin, heparin, all those things, right? Things that cause vasodilation. So most times when people are going through a very severe type 1 hypersensitivity, they'll have a decreased systemic vascular resistance, right? Many times they will have edema. Why? Because they have increased vascular permeability. Again, some of these very severe type 1 hypersensitivity reactions can lead to ARDS. Remember, the primary mechanism behind ARDS is that your pulmonary capillaries, they become more leaky, right? So these people are going to have lots and lots of problems. And that's the immediate reaction. Now, the thing is, remember, we also have IgEs parked on the surfaces of our eosinophils, right? So the thing is, many times you'll have an immediate reaction, but down the line, a few hours later, you'll have a late phase reaction. The reason that that reaction is late phase is that our eosinophils, they're kind of gearing up to produce all the other things that can cause some serious havoc, right? So, you know, the eosinophils, they'll release their nasty, nasty stuff, and those things can cause lots of problems. To be honest with you, this is one of the reasons why when people come in for like an asthma exacerbation, you're going to treat them immediately with like a beta 2 agonist like albuterol. You're going to give them IV corticosteroids. But many times, those IV corticosteroids are actively helping you to prevent the late phase reaction from happening in the first place. Again, so that's the mechanism behind the type 1 hypersensitivity reaction. And again, what are the classic types of type 1 hypersensitivity reactions? Again, asthma is like the poster child. If you see a person with like a food allergy of some sort, that is almost always a type 1 hypersensitivity reaction, right? Or if a person has like hay fever, right? When there's a lot of pollen outside, a lot of dust mites outside, and they're exposed to animal dander, and you see them having respiratory symptoms like their noses are very irritated, they have edema of their nostrils and all those things, allergic rhinitis, hay fever, think about a type 1 hypersensitivity reaction. Whenever you see a person have an anaphylactic transfusion reaction, that's also a kind of type 1 hypersensitivity. Basically, remember, this is classically found in people that have IgA deficiency, right? IgA deficiency. If a person has IgA deficiency, then those people, IgA is not a native protein to their bodies. So since IgA is not a native protein to their bodies, if you give them a first blood transfusion and you don't really clean up that blood and there's some IgA in it, the thing that will happen is those people will form IgE antibodies against that IgA. So the first blood transfusion they get, not a big deal. But when they get a second blood transfusion, that if that second blood transfusion contains IgA, those IgE antibodies that they've made against you, that's already pre-bound to mast cells, will link up with that IgA. You're going to get cross-linking, or you're going to get anaphylaxis, right? Anaphylactic transfusion reactions, an example of a type 1 hypersensitivity reaction. And remember, the drug of choice for anaphylaxis is epinephrine, right? Because in anaphylaxis, the thing that is going to kill you is bronchoconstriction, your airway filling. So the thing that happens is you give a very powerful beta 2 agonist, like your epinephrine, that will open up your airways and relieve your symptoms. So again, these are all the classic types of type 1 hypersensitivity reactions, right? So what if they give you a question about a 24-year-old female? They tell you that she has a history of lupus, right? And for the last two weeks, she has been having shortness of breath. She has been having like jaundice. And then they give you some labs. You notice that her total bilirubin is 3 and her indirect bilirubin is 6, right? And her indirect bilirubin is like 3.9. Her direct bilirubin is like 2.1, right? And then they tell you that a Combs test is positive, right? If you see that, that's obviously an autoimmune hemolytic anemia, right? Remember, in autoimmune hemolytic anemias, you're making antibodies against your red blood cells, right? Remember, it's pretty classic in people that have lupus. And you may be like, Divine, why does this person have jaundice? Well, think about it. Those antibodies are going to be causing a lot of hemolysis, right? And all that hemolysis that is happening is going to lead to the formation of a lot of indirect bilirubin, right? It's going to lead to the formation of a lot of indirect bilirubin, right? And some of you may also be wondering, okay, Divine, why is the direct bilirubin also elevated? It's like 2.1. Well, let me explain. The thing is, whenever you have, this is like a concept I should probably address in a different podcast, but let me tell you this. There are two kinds of indirect hyperbilirubinemia you can get. You can get an indirect hyperbilirubinemia because there is something wrong with the enzyme that conjugates bilirubin. That's UDP, glucuronosyl transferase, UDPGT, right? So things like Krigler-Nahar syndrome or Gilbert syndrome, right? Whenever you have indirect hyperbilirubinemias from that particular cause, where like UDPGT does not work, you'll have an indirect hyperbilirubinemia, but you will not have any kind of direct hyperbilirubinemia, Why? Because the bottleneck causing the indirect hyperbilirubinemia is at the level of the enzyme that conjugates bilirubin. Now, the second kind of indirect hyperbilirubinemia you can have is one that is secondary to a non-UDPGT problem. Whenever you have an indirect hyperbilirubinemia from a non-UDPGT problem, so say, for example, like hemolysis, as you are making more indirect bilirubin, UDPGT will be working over time and it will make more direct bilirubin, right? So whenever UDPGT is working just fine, if you have an indirect hyperbilirubinemia, you'll almost certainly also have some kind of direct hyperbilirubinemia. Although most times the indirect bilirubin will be numerically higher than the direct bilirubin just because of enzyme kinetics. But again, I'm not going to go into that deep biochemistry discussion right now. If you understand what I've just said, you're pretty much set, right? So what causes a type 2 hypersensitivity reaction? Basically, a type 2 hypersensitivity reaction is mediated by antibodies, right? The big players here are IgM and IgG, right? The way easy way to remember that is just remember like GameStop. You know, GameStop is like a big meme stock. It was a big meme stock early this year. It's probably still a meme stock now, but that's a different conversation. But remember the game, the G and the M in game, right? It's mediated by IgG and IgM. Right? And basically, when IgG and I, because you may be like, oh, divine, okay, what do these antibodies actually do that causes the destruction? Well, let me explain. When IgG and IgM binds to your cells, the thing that's going to happen is IgG and IgM, they are capable of activating the classic complement cascade. When you activate the classic complement cascade, complement comes, forms the membrane attack complex and explodes your cells, right? So that's really what happens. So if you're exploding your red blood cells, you're literally having hemolysis of those red blood cells, right? So again, what are the classic types of type 2 hypersensitivity reactions you may see on your exam? Well, if you see a person that has, again, like an autoimmune hemolytic anemia, as I described, remember, those people will have a hemolytic anemia and the Coombs test will be positive. Right? That's an example of a type 2 hypersensitivity reaction. Again, the Coombs test being positive tells you that, oh, the hemolysis is being mediated by antibodies, right? As an aside, if you're thinking about something like G6PD deficiency or people that have hereditary spherocytosis, G6PD deficiency, hereditary spherocytosis, those are also examples of hemolytic anemias. But those things are, for the most part, not antibody mediated, right? So those will be examples of Coombs negative, right? More specifically, direct Coombs tests, right? Direct Coombs negative hemolytic anemias, right? If you see a child, right, that has like a lot of joint problems, has mitral stenosis or any of those issues, right? Rheumatic fever, right? That's also an example of a type 2 hypersensitivity reaction, right? Basically, there's some molecular mimicry at play there where the antibodies that your body makes against strep pyogenes, that's group A strep, also happen to cross-react with antigens that we see like in the myocardium, antigens that we see in joints, antigens that we see in the basal ganglia. In fact, those antigens that you see in the basal ganglia, those antibodies attacking them is part of what causes Sydenham's chorea, right? Or this condition called PANDAS. But again, that's a different conversation. But again, rheumatic fever is a type 2 hypersensitivity reaction, right? Or if they give you a question about a young male, he's a smoker, right? And he has hematuria. And then they tell you that, oh, you know, they get a kidney biopsy and they see a linear pattern on immunofluorescence, right? Good pasture syndrome. That's an example of a type 2 hypersensitivity reaction. You basically have made antibodies against type 4 collagen, right? Antibodies against type 4 collagen, right? In the basement membrane of your kidneys, and it also attacks the lungs as well, right? And again, if you have an acute hemolytic transfusion reaction, right? So it'll be a person, they're getting a blood transfusion, a few minutes in, they start complaining of flank pain and hematuria. That's like the classic thing our friends at the MBMEs love to throw in, flank pain and hematuria. Whenever you see stuff like that, right, that's an acute hemolytic transfusion reaction. Even a delayed hemolytic transfusion reaction, those are all examples of type 2 hypersensitivity reactions, right? Again, those preformed IgG, IgM antibodies are the things that are throwing you into big problems. Remember, those people, they need fluids, right? And then you need to do a direct Coombs test to figure out what in the world happened. Right? What in the world happened? And also, if they give you a question about like a child, right? Or a patient with a history of lupus, right? That, you know, is having like petechiae, having purpura, having like nosebleeds, gum bleeds, right? And you notice that their red blood cell count is fine. Their hemoglobin hematocrit is okay. Their white blood cell count is fine. But you notice that, man, their platelet counts are really low. It's like 3,000, right? That's ITP, right? immune thrombocytopenic purpura. Remember, in this case, the antigen that you've made IgG and IgM antibodies against is GP2B3A, right? Again, that's an example of a type 2 hypersensitivity reaction. That's an example of a type 2 hypersensitivity reaction. Okay, so again, type 2 hypersensitivity is going to be IgG, IgM, right? And it's antibodies that are causing the problem. Okay, now in type 3 hypersensitivity reactions, right? So what if they give you a question about like a patient, they tell you that, oh, wow, this person just started like an infusion of rituximab for some malignancy. And then you notice that, you know, over the last 3 days, they've been having a lot of like joint pain. They've been having like their creatinine has been going up and all those things. You know, they just feel unwell, right? That's serum sickness, right? Again, remember, serum sickness is associated with like infusions of stuff like monoclonal antibodies, antitoxins, things like that. That's actually an example of a type 3 hypersensitivity reaction, right? So what exactly is a type 3 hypersensitivity reaction? Basically, the big thing to remember is that you form antigen-antibody complexes, right? But in this case, these antigen-antibody complexes are mobile. They are mobile. They move around the body. Basically, it's almost like you form an antigen. You form an antibody again. You have an antigen. You form an antibody against it. And then those things are like, let's go crash the party at many different parts of the body, right? So they go to the kidneys, cause kidney damage. They go to joints, they cause joint damage, right? So the antibody, right, that is bound to that antigen, again, triggers the complement cascade and causes a lot of problems, right? Like, for example, if you see a child, let's say they had like an upper respiratory infection like 3 weeks ago, right? Or they had like a skin infection like 3 weeks ago. And then, so like skin infection, like, I don't know, like erysipelas or, you know, like cellulitis. And then now they're having hematuria and they have like 3+ proteinuria with dysmorphic erythrocytes. In those circumstances, right, you absolutely want to think about post-streptococcal glomerulonephritis, right? That's an example of a type 3 hypersensitivity reaction, right? In fact, like many of the vasculitides, right, many of the nephritic syndromes, again, with the exception of good pastures, which is type 2, are all examples of type 3 hypersensitivity reactions, right? So again, that's something that's kind of high yield to know for exams, right? Okay, now as we begin to wrap up, let's go to the type 4 hypersensitivity reactions, right? So the thing is, basically, let me just tell you this. If you see any words like delayed type hypersensitivity or TB skin test or a coin allergy or a metal allergy, just stop thinking, you know, look for the answer that says type 4 hypersensitivity reaction, pick up that answer and move on, right? So the thing is, type 4 hypersensitivity reactions, right? Like, how do they arise? I'll give you some examples, but I think this is one of those hypersensitivities that many people don't really understand, right? Many people don't really understand. But let me explain exactly how this works. The thing is, there are two major players in a type 4 hypersensitivity reaction. Those are your T helper 1 cells and those are your macrophages, right? Your T helper 1 cells and your macrophages, right? So let me describe in a few steps. Let's say, for example, poison ivy, right? Poison ivy is like the classic poster child for type 4 hypersensitivity reactions, right? So let's describe how this happens. Well, the very first step is that your skin comes in contact with poison ivy. Whoops, that sucks, right? It's going to be a person that was exploring the woods or something, right? And then step 2 is that that poison ivy will bind to some skin antigens. It's almost like you're priming the pump, right, with some of these skin antigens. Now, the thing is, in step 3, the macrophages in your skin will be like, what is this, right? It's going to bind up that poison ivy, right? The macrophage will gobble up that antigen. And remember, macrophages are antigen-presenting cells, right? So since they are antigen-presenting cells and they've just gobbled up some antigen, they will literally present that antigen to a particular cell, right? They're going to present that antigen on MHC class 2 to your CD4-positive T helper 1 cells. And when they present it, well, those CD4-positive T helper 1 cells, they are very good at releasing something I'll call interferon gamma. So that'll be step 4. They're going to release interferon gamma, right? And then in step 5, the thing is, interferon gamma is like giving like a big Thanksgiving meal to a macrophage. It's going to ginger that macrophage. It's going to supercharge that macrophage, right? So that macrophage will get activated. That is step 5. The macrophage will get activated and it will go back to the place where it gobbled up that antigen, right? And we know that macrophages, when they show up to a party, they kill everything in sight. They just absolutely destroy everything in sight, right? So, you know, that'll be step 6, right? The macrophage comes and it just damages everything, right? Causes phagocytosis, releases interleukin 1, interleukin 6, TNF alpha. So you get like local tissue damage and all these things, right? And then in step 7, you notice, oh, gee, what's wrong with my skin, right? Again, that's why it's called a delayed type hypersensitivity reaction, right? There are many, many types of type 4 hypersensitivity reactions, right? Like the classic one is like a TB skin test, right? TB skin test, right? That's an example of a delayed hypersensitivity. If you see a person with like contact dermatitis of any sort, right? Like a nickel problem or a poison ivy problem or whatever, right? Think about a type 4 hypersensitivity. Rheumatoid arthritis is in fact a type 4 hypersensitivity reaction, right? Even Hashimoto's thyroiditis, right? Hashimoto's is an example, for the most part, of a type 4 hypersensitivity reaction. Although, because it's mainly T cells that do the killing of the person's thyroid gland, right? Although to a minor extent, it also involves type 2. It is almost like a crossover kind of hypersensitivity reaction, right? Multiple sclerosis, right, is a type 4 hypersensitivity reaction, right? If a person has Crohn's disease, celiac disease, again, many times these things are type 4 hypersensitivity reactions, right? Although again, they have some crossover, right? So the big ones I'll say to know for your exams, the TB skin test, contact dermatitis, those are kind of like the two big ones you want to know from that perspective for your exams. So I think I'm going to go ahead and wrap up here. Again, as I do at the end of every podcast, again, I do offer USMLE review courses. Again, if I always encourage people to make decisions for themselves. If you've seen the quality of my teaching that I give over these podcasts, that gives you a pretty clear, solid idea of how I teach in a group setting. So I offer you courses that are targeted towards step one, towards step two, CK, towards step three. And then I also offer one-on-one tutoring for the USMLE exams, USMLE step one all the way through to three, the preclinical med school exams, the third year clerkship shelf exams. I do offer tutoring for all those things. And then again, I have a new website called divineinterventionlifelessons.com. Right now I have almost 50 podcasts. Again, they are life lessons podcasts. They are Bible based. And, you know, again, they're short, they're sweet, and they're just targeted at addressing common problems that are faced by people. And then I also have these, and actually have those podcasts on Apple Podcasts as well. And then I have these podcasts for this, you know, USMLE materials on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, and on Spotify. And I also have a YouTube channel, Divine Intervention, USMLE Podcasts and Videos. So thank you for listening to me today. Have a wonderful rest of your day. God bless you and Happy New Year. Thank you.